The Business Buzz Podcast. The Business Buzz.
Good day and welcome to the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on Voice of Vids. That's VOW FM 88.1, broadcasting live from our studios in Bromfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Mliwa Mob, Justice Gavaza, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so. Who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to unpack and keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business, commerce and economics. So for today's show, we're going to be talking about, understanding, UIF. There are some benefits, some relief that the government has been offering through the UIF because of the COVID-19, and that's what we're going to be exploring because Stats SA recently published the results of a new survey, so focusing on how the coronavirus pandemic has impacted operations of South African businesses. And they found that a total of 707 businesses in the formal sector responded, saying that in the two-week period from the 30th of March to about 13 April, they were outlining the pandemic's impact on turnover, trading, workforce, imports, exports, purchases, prices, and business survival. And it was actually estimated that more than a third of South African businesses plan to cut jobs because of the coronavirus. So today we're going to be looking at unpacking the unemployment insurance fund, the labor policies around it, the legalities in filing a claim, together with how it's being used to offer some relief to the public. So to help us to navigate this topic, we are going to be talking to Dumisani Ndiweni, who is an associate at Weber Wenzel, as well as the Shadow Minister of Labor from the Democratic Alliance, that is Dr. Michael Cardo. And we're also going to be talking to them about unemployment, the employment issue, labor-related policies and matters, together with the law considerations regarding the UIF, that is the Unemployment Insurance Fund. So that's how the show is going to be looking like for today. Also coming up for the next hour, we're going to be giving you the business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news, and also followed by the state of your 100 Rand in our Buffalo Index. Remember that you can find and follow Voice of Vids, that's VOW FM 88.1, on social media. Our Facebook page is VOW FM or Voice of Vids, and then our other Facebook page is Vids Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VOW FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also stream the station live on vowfm.co.za, and remember that podcasts of the Business Buzz show are available on vids.journalism.co.za/business. That's the hub for our content, together with the streaming platforms where you can search on iono.fm, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you choose to listen to your podcasts. So that's how the rest of the hour is going to be looking like. Definitely make sure you don't turn that dial. On the other side of this, we get into the Business Wrap.
Business Wrap with Lebo Pasha.
It's time for us to get into the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we are joined by Lebo Pasha, who is a business strategist and general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute, to give us the week's business wrap. Lebo, how are you? How are things since we last spoke?
I'm good, Mudiwa. Greetings to you and greetings to the listeners as well. I'm good. I think there's some positivity in a very, very negative sort of year where lots of things are not going as planned. Yeah.
Okay. I think, in terms of the wrap itself, I guess the most immediate news is what happened with interest rates yesterday, the MPC coming out, and I think they reduced interest rates by a further 50 basis points. Can you just give us some color on that?
Yes, the Monetary Policy Committee of the Reserve Bank voted to reduce the repo rate for a fourth time this year, so from 4.25% to 3.75%. So we're starting to see a lot of emails from banks going out, basically telling their clients that the prime lending rate has also fallen from 7.75 to 7.25. So that's some good news that we've received. And I think the hopes are that the rate cut will provide some sort of relief to indebted consumers, indebted South Africans. So if you've got a bond on your house, if you've got car finance or personal loan or credit card, this will hopefully ease some of that burden for you and hopefully also get people to spend a bit more and stimulate growth in the economy or try and reverse the negative impacts of COVID-19 and the ratings downgrade.
For people that might not fully understand, when we reduce interest rates, why would the MPC want to do something like that?
So basically what happens when you reduce the interest rates is, in simple terms, it reduces the debt rate or the credit lending rate that people are paying interest on their loans. So what that would do is that would mean you now have an extra 400 or 500 rand in your pocket, and it would increase the money supply. So the hope is that that extra 300 or 400 or 500 rand in your pocket will go towards you now spending on goods and services in the economy. So you're going to go out and buy some winter clothes, go out and buy some extra food for winter, go out and maybe buy data because you're working or learning from home. So the overall objective is to try and ease the burden on consumers, especially those that are indebted, but also to stimulate the economy by stimulating spending in the economy.
Now, I guess tied to that is, part of the purchasing power is the strength of the currency. And I noticed that, for the month at least, it looks like the rand is, quite a bit stronger than it was previously. I think right now, using our rates on Friday morning, we have it at 1783. So your thoughts?
Yes. Yeah, so on Thursday, it reached around 1758.59, which was around the level of pre-lockdown levels and pre-downgrade to junk status levels at the end of March, which is quite good, but also it could point to the fact that the market had already priced in the downgrade to junk status for South Africa, and maybe most of the depreciation we saw where it moved to around 1926 was mostly because of fears around COVID-19. And specifically around the impact on the economy. And I think with South Africa having managed the lockdowns fairly well so far and cases being way lower than expected, that positivity now is helping strengthen the rand a bit. So we'll definitely see where it goes as COVID cases are starting to increase again.
Okay. And then I guess lastly, the housing market, what's going on? We actually had a whole show around, rent and all of that stuff. But the property market as a whole, where are you seeing things going?
Well, at this stage, I think we're all looking into a glass, that crystal ball and trying to predict the future. But the Reserve Bank is predicting a bigger contraction in the economy to 7% from around 6%. Things are going to get a bit tougher. We're only really going to see the extent of job losses once the lockdowns lift over the next couple of months, or once we move to the lower levels of the lockdown, level 2, level 1, where people will be going back to work and seeing whether they still have a job. So with that, we've seen some analysts in the property sector saying they're expecting to see at least a fall of about 5% in house prices. So we potentially might see another mini crash in the housing market, depending again on how deep the recession we're going into will be. And right now it's forecast to be a bigger impact on the more expensive properties. So if you're planning to shoot a rap video, you need to do it quite quickly.
So that's been it in terms of our business wrap for today. The last thing that you heard there, if you're planning to shoot a rap video, this might be a good time for you to go and invest in that mansion, because high-end property prices are coming down as predicted by the South African Reserve Bank because of a greater economic contraction that they are predicting. So that's Lebo also telling us about, the rand has strengthened. He's highlighting that yesterday it even touched 1758. At the moment it's at around 1783 as of Friday. Because it's fluctuating, we'll see where that rate is by the time that we talk to you guys next week. And then just starting the conversation off with the repo rate, because the South African Reserve Bank cutting interest rates again for the fourth time this year down to 3.75%, another 50 basis points rate cut. So that's been it. Thank you so much to our financial expert, Lebo Pasha, who is a business strategist and general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute. On the other side of this, we get into the state of your 100 Rand.
Business Wrap with Lebo Pasha. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into the Buffalo Index. That's a part of the show where we tell you the state of your 100 Rand. What can your 100 Rand, what can your Buffalo do for you? So for today, we've spoken previously about what your 100 Rand can do for you in the home brewing market, because up until now, even though we are in level 4 of the lockdown, the sale of alcohol is still not permitted at this time. And what that has resulted in is a burgeoning or a rising black market economy around cigarettes and alcohol. But for today, we're looking specifically at the alcohol or liquor market, and looking at some of the common ones that people are drinking out there. Just thought I'd highlight some of the price differences that have come out, and some of the inflation, some of the exorbitant prices that are being charged out there. I'm going to try to relate this because starting off with Hunter's, Hunter's Gold and Hunter's Dry, if you are looking for a 440 milliliter bottle, usually that's about 15 rand. If you consider that a pack of six is about 90 rand, but on the black market you can get it for about 100 rand. And then I honestly think that must be 100 rand for the pack, because it just doesn't make any sense. And then the same can be said about Savannah, which each little bottle costs roughly 13 rand, which means you can get about 7 for your Buffalo in a normal case. At the moment, it seems that that's gonna set you back on 20 rand. I think that's per bottle. And then Castle Lights, which normally costs 8 rand 75, you can get about 10 or 11 of those for your Buffaloes in a normal case. Pack of 24 normally costs 210 rand, which means on the black market each one is costing about 80 rand, which means you can only get just one, and just one and a little bit of change for your Buffalo. That's how it's looking like on that side. Some of the other prices are coming in: all your brown bottles, you can only probably get one beer, or for your Buffalo, because each one is about 65 rand. And then you can get a bottle of Heineken, each one is costing about that one Buffalo. And then the more upmarket stuff, your Hennessy is about four Buffaloes, and then you can also get Smirnoff for just over a Buffalo. I am open to correction if some of these, if I've not contextualized properly whether these are bottle costs or whether these are pack costs, but it sounds like these are single costs because people are taking advantage of the fact that legally people can't go out and buy these things in the shops, and that's the market that has actually been created out there. Very crazy, but that's what's going on the streets, as they say. Let's see what the next few weeks have in store for for liquor shop owners, bottle store owners, and whether or not people will be able to start buying alcohol again. So that's been it in terms of the Buffalo Index. On the other side of this, we get into our main topic.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz. Mob Justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. For today, we are talking about understanding UIF and some of the COVID-19 relief that's been given as part of the government's plans to just help everyone to cope with the disaster that's been brought on by coronavirus and the ensuing economic disaster that's brought about by businesses and the economy not operating at where they are. But before we get into that discussion, remember that you can keep in touch with us on Facebook. We are VOW FM, that's Voice of Wits, and you can also find our other Facebook page, that is Wits Radio Academy, and then on Twitter we're at VOW FM, and our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. So to start things off, we're just going to be talking about some labor policies, because this, the UIF and the temporary relief has sparked some debate just around labor policies. And to help us unpack some of these issues, we are joined by Dr. Michael John Cardo, who is the Shadow Minister of Labor for the Democratic Alliance. Dr. Michael, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks for having me on your show.
No. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us your time. I think before, we get too far into the nitty-gritties, could you give us an overview of the UIF? Just basically as the UIF, what does it actually aim to do? Because we understand what is being used for now, during this disaster time, but generally, what has it been put in place for?
Sure. Well, the Unemployment Insurance Fund gives relief to workers when they become unemployed or are unable to work because of various reasons, maternity, adoption leave, or illness. And it also provides relief to the dependents of deceased contributors. So the fund itself is governed by various pieces of legislation, the Unemployment Insurance Act of 2001 and the Unemployment Insurance Contributions Act of 2002. And these acts provide for benefits to which contributors are allowed and the imposition and collection of the contributions to the Unemployment Insurance Fund, respectively, and they've been in operation since about 2002. So you can't claim from the Unemployment Insurance Fund if you have resigned, if you've been suspended, or if you've absconded from work, for example. But otherwise, all employers and employees contribute to the fund a set amount every month, and in the circumstances which I described previously, you can then claim for benefits on the basis of those contributions. Obviously, this is separate to the COVID-19 TERS benefit, which has been implemented by the Unemployment Insurance Fund since the beginning of our now 8-week lockdown at the end of March. And that benefit scheme, which companies can apply from in order to cover their workers who are not working during the lockdown, that benefit scheme, which is called the COVID-19 TERS benefit scheme, is separate to the ordinary UIF benefits, which cover maternity and so forth.
I think just zeroing in as a follow-up, just zeroing in on that COVID-19 tourist benefit, I always find that the term tourist to be very interesting. I understand it's an acronym, but as a policy response, as a policy tool, to perhaps help ordinary South Africans cope with the possible loss of income and, you know, things like that. How do you feel, it has gone? Like, was it probably appropriate? These are unprecedented times, we understand, but just from a crafting a response point of view, how do you feel about the way that it was once structured and it's been implemented?
I think it was an important intervention. The UIF has played a critical role in helping workers through the lockdown, those workers who have lost income or had their income reduced. So I think it was an important and necessary intervention by government. But remember, there are something like 8 million workers registered on the UIF database, and there are about 16 million people who have jobs in South Africa. So many people will fall through the cracks, informal traders, self-employed people who are not registered for UIF. So it's not a silver bullet, and there certainly were very big problems with implementation at first. So, for example, when the system was first introduced at the very beginning of lockdown in late March, there was quite a complicated application process. It involved sending an email to which you would get an automated reply. The automated reply didn't always come. The system kept crashing. So in short, it was very difficult and complicated to apply. And payments took a long time to be processed. When companies were paid out, some of their workers were paid, other workers weren't paid, and you couldn't really understand the logic why some had been paid and others hadn't. And it was very difficult to get assistance from the UIF because they had a call center which was understaffed. So it was sometimes, oftentimes, in fact, very difficult for employers to get through to anybody, to speak to them, to understand why their application had been rejected or why they hadn't heard back anything or why certain of their workers hadn't been compensated. So there were many, many teething problems with implementation at first. Having said that, the application process has now been simplified. You simply go to a new web portal and everything has been streamlined. It's much easier now and payments are happening much quicker. Clearly, the UIF has brought on board assistance from the SA Revenue Service, for example. It's increased the number of people working at its call centers. And in short, the process is flowing much smoother. That's not to say it's 100% perfect. I still get loads of WhatsApp messages, emails, phone calls every day from employers who are at their wits' end because they haven't heard anything back or because they have put in a claim and they've only received a very small percentage of that claim back and they don't know how to distribute it among their workers. So those problems do remain, but in fairness to the Unemployment Insurance Fund, it has jacked itself up. It has improved a great deal since the beginning of the implementation of the COVID-19 TERS benefit. And the people who are working there are doing great work. They're working very hard. They're under a huge amount of pressure, but they are doing their best.
The other thing that I think our listeners would benefit getting your thoughts on is, I guess, the development of labor relations or conversations between labor government, the private sector, and all that during the crisis, because I think the crisis has, you know, been a cocktail of, you know, various factors from business rescues to TERS benefits that we're talking about right now, the inability to work, you know, all of that. How have you seen, you know, the development of labor relations during the crisis? And do you see things, you know, starting to thaw at the moment, or do you anticipate that there might be a labor crisis on the horizon?
Well, that's a very good and interesting question, and there are a number of ways to answer it. So perhaps I'll hone in on a couple of things. One is that the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdown has created the circumstances for an employment crisis. So we have heard estimates of job losses in the region. At first it was said about 1 to 2 million people would lose their jobs in South Africa. Then National Treasury came out a few weeks ago and said actually it's far worse than that. Anywhere between 3 and 7 million jobs could be lost. Now, remember we have currently in South Africa 10 million unemployed people. And if you add another 3 to 7 million people on top of that, we are going to have an unemployment crisis of epidemic proportions, as it were, on our hands. We already have that crisis, but it's going to be magnified even more so. So, yes, the ingredients certainly exist for a crisis within labor relations between the various social actors, as it were, simply by virtue of the fact that so many people run the risk of becoming unemployed, and that is going to have all sorts of social and economic consequences that will complicate the relationship between labor, organized labor, that is, and business. One of the interesting things for me that has emerged from this crisis to do with the labor relations landscape is that, you know, often it was said in the early days that our sort of labor regime, our labor legislation regime was being crafted, that the interests of big business and organized labor were very well reflected, but that the interests of small business were sidelined and ignored. And it's become very clear to me, just by virtue of the number of phone calls and communications of various forms that I get every day from small business people, that they are the ones suffering the most. You know, many big businesses have the reserves to make it through this crisis, but small business people who only employ a few staff members and who don't have the same reserves as big business, they are in real trouble. They are the ones who are going to be put out of business because of COVID-19 and because of an extended lockdown. And it's really the interests of these small business people that we should be championing in the labor relations landscape. We should also be championing, of course, the rights and the interests of the unemployed. There's a huge focus on South Africa, on organized labor, unionized labor, the right to so-called decent work, but we mustn't neglect the 10 million unemployed people that we currently have, which might possibly soon swell to 13 to 17 million unemployed people. So we must always bear in mind when we're talking about labor relations and the relationships between business and labor, that we must look out not just for people who currently have a job, as important as that is and as important as workers' rights are, but we must also look out for the interests of unemployed people because there are going to be a great number of them by the time that COVID-19 and the lockdown are over.
Perhaps to round up the discussion, as the Democratic Alliance, how have you seen your own labor policies perhaps develop or evolve, you know, due to the crisis? Have they changed in any way? Because, for example, I understand that the DA had actually proposed a policy where, you know, provisionally employers and employees should half their 1% UIF contributions to, let's say, 0.5. You know, issues like that, have you found yourselves, adapting your policies or perhaps looking and using this crisis as a way to, you know, maybe fine-tune or rethink some of your proposed policies around labor?
Certainly we have. Look, on the UIF contributions, at the beginning of the lockdown, we called for a payment holiday on those contributions, and that was agreed to by the government for a period of 3 months. But to answer your question more broadly, is that obviously, and I do hate this cliche, and politicians use it all the time, they say that it can't be business as usual, but there is some truth in that, because COVID-19 is by its very nature going to change the way that we have to approach economic policy broadly and labor policy in particular. So there needs to be a reset, and we need to think creatively and differently about how we get people into employment. So from that point of view, yes, the DA's thinking on labor policy is adapting and changing and will necessarily be shaped by the course of COVID-19 and the consequences of the lockdown. We'll have to respond to that, be reactive, but also proactive, and think of ways, new ways of getting people into employment. Just on your specific question about that proposal on reducing contributions, that was an idea put forward by the DA in the run-up to the 2014 election, and some history is necessary to understand that proposal. At that stage, we're talking 6 or 7 years ago, the UIF had built up huge surpluses, and it had about 115 billion rand in assets at the time. So benefit payments at the time equaled an average of just 43% of contributions, and so the UIF built up a substantial surplus from the early 2000s. So the idea then was that if you cut or provisionally halve the contributions made by both employers and employees from 1% to 0.5%, that would have had the overall effect of reducing the cost of hiring workers. It would have stimulated the economy by increasing the net wages of workers and increasing their spending power, because they would have taken more money home at the end of the day. They would have had more out of their paychecks if that UIF contribution had been halved. And I think our thinking at the time, the DA's thinking that is, was that the fiscal risk of this proposal could be mitigated by reinstating the 1% contribution determined by the UIF if the capital base contracted beyond a certain benchmark. Anyway, that proposal is now 6 years old, and of course COVID-19 has completely overturned the landscape, as it were, and we would need to rethink such a proposal going forward. The UIF, I think, currently has around about 120 billion rand in reserves. Look, it's a bit of a moving target. The number went down pretty dramatically after the ratings downgrade, and because the markets have been so volatile and unstable of late, the figure changes all the time. But we would need to be careful about any new and far-reaching such proposals, because if 3 to 7 million people are going to become unemployed, then whatever UIF has in reserves at the moment is going to dwindle pretty quickly. So we just need to cast a careful eye over that.
Okay, so that's been us in conversation with Dr. Michael John Cardo, who is the Shadow Minister for Labour for the Democratic Alliance, just giving us a roundup of some of the conversations around labour in South Africa as brought on by the COVID-19 crisis. He's just starting off by giving us just an explanation of what UIF is and its intended purpose and how it's been used as a way to assist people during this crisis. He's just highlighting, though, that the COVID-19 temporary employee-employer relief scheme is separate to what UIF is traditionally meant for, but it's been used as a tool to give people some type of ways to cope with the depressed economic activity at this time. And he's also just telling us about how some of their policies and policy proposals have perhaps evolved and changed because of what's going on with the crisis. So thank you so much. That was us with Dr. Michael Cardo. So on the other side of this, we continue with the show, and we're going to be talking to some law experts about some of these labor issues. So definitely make sure you don't turn that dial. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to The Business Buzz.
Welcome back to The Business Buzz. We are talking about, UIF. We're talking about some of the tourist benefits, but more than anything else, labor laws, labor relations during this lockdown period, just highlighting some of those issues because of, the coronavirus. And right now we want to switch over. We're talking to, Dr. Cardo from the DA about, labor policy and the discussions and how labor relations have evolved over the crisis. But right now we want to turn our attention to labor laws and some of the issues around UIF claims and stuff like that. But before we get into that part of the discussion, remember that you can find our Facebook page, that is VOW FM or Voice of Wits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is Wits Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're at VOW FM, and our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. So to help us unpack the law side of things, we are joined by Dumisani Ndiweni, who has experience prosecuting disciplinary hearings, drafting pleadings and various applications, and conducting trials in the labor court and labor appeal courts. He also drafts employment contracts and conducts due diligence investigations and provides advice on restraints of trade agreements. So yeah, this is Dumisani Ndiweni, and he is an associate at Weber Wenzel. Dumisani, hi, how are you? Are you well? And can you just let our listeners know, what your role in the legal fraternity entails?
Hi, how's it? Thanks for having me online, and greetings to all your listeners as well. I mean, we in the employment space at Weber Wenzel, we deal with anything employment, basically. So anything employment, we are able to assist, particularly for employers who have any mass issues, and for general employees at some stages.
Okay. Now, this UIF issue has become quite a big talking point in the last month or so, I think, particularly because it's the conduit through which government is giving the COVID-19 temporary employer relief scheme benefits through. Just stepping back, is UIF a legal right for every employee in the country, or are there eligibility criteria that are involved that need to be followed, stuff like that? What does it actually entail?
Look, I think for purposes of this conversation, and in light of COVID happening, we need to distinguish between UIF and TERS. So UIF in its normal sense, outside TERS, is a facility which is available to almost everybody. There are conditions such as you have to be a contributing member to UIF or a contributing individual to UIF to qualify. And like any other insurance fund, it's regulated through an act. The act is the Unemployment Insurance Act. There's obviously limitations within that on who applies and who doesn't, who applies and who qualifies. But in terms of COVID, you have what you now know as, you've probably heard the term TERS. TERS actually is the Temporary Employment Relief Scheme, Employer Relief Scheme rather, and it is for employers who, as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, are forced to temporarily close operations wholly or partly for a period of 3 months or less. And if employees are affected by such closure, they will qualify for TERS. So if, in short, if your business is closing or partially closing, as an employee, you can qualify for TERS. I mean, there's pertinent criteria which is also applicable to TERS, where the employer must have registered with the UIF, the employer must comply with the application procedure, and the employer's closure of business and operations must be directly linked to COVID. So those are the people who would qualify under the TERS.
And then all of that, just stepping back, because I think if we address UIF first, like you said, there needs to be a distinction between the two of them. Just UIF on its own, because I think some people, it's become a relevant thing because a lot of employers have had to lay off people. There's been a lot of business closures, so a lot of people have started turning to it. What does it actually take to successfully apply for a UIF benefit in the normal instance where you've either lost your job or a company has closed down, you know, stuff like that?
So, I mean, at the top of my head, you will need to provide your ID number, an ID copy, your normal details, so such as your name, your surname, where you were employed, and proof that you are no longer employed. You'll also need to fill out a form where you basically insert your banking details, and there's another form called the UI-19 forms. All of these forms are accessible on the website and at different labor centers.
And then one of the big issues that's then come up is that there are companies that have been claiming that they are under financial strain due to lockdowns and stuff like that, but have not paid their employees, but have continued to deduct UIF fees. You know, is this legal, and how do employees actually mitigate some of these issues?
You see, this is, it sounds a bit off, because UIF is deducted off a person's salary or wages, whatever the case may be, but it's deducted off a person's income. And if an employee is not receiving an income, the employer technically can't deduct UIF because there's no income to deduct UIF from. So if an employer receives remuneration, UIF is payable, but if an employer doesn't receive, if an employee receives remuneration, UIF is deductible. But in circumstances where an employee does not receive an income, UIF is then not deductible.
Okay. I think for me, one of the most topical issues when it comes to this is just the legalities around who contributes and who doesn't contribute, because I think a lot of people have, through the crisis and through either being laid off and some of those issues, found out during that process that the employer actually doesn't contribute to UIF. Is there anything on that end legally that requires employers to contribute towards UIF, or is it just a completely hands-off from the government, voluntary process from employers to contribute on that front?
No, I mean, there is a legal obligation on employers to contribute to the UIF, because they actually ought to be deducting it off the employee's pay and then sending the money off into the UIF. If employees then find out that when it comes to claim stage that they have not been registered with the UIF, that's now a scenario where the UIF, through its labor inspectors and the Department of Labor, institutes investigations and try to ascertain as to why the employer has not been registering the employees, or why the employer is not being transferring the funds to the UIF. And that's a whole investigation process which the Department of Labor and the UIF jointly run together.
And then the other one related to that, from your experience, I guess, dealing in the sector, what do you find are some of the common issues, the challenges that people often face when it comes to UIF, you know, in its normal sense?
Look, the fact of the matter is the UIF is literally like a pot of money, and a number of people apply to try and receive these funds. So sometimes it's a matter of the demand is a bit too high, and the UIF has a slightly slower turnaround time. But of late, the UIF, if your documents are in order, if you've followed the right process online and you've applied or you've gone to the labor center and they've assisted you accordingly, you would be able to qualify and receive your payments.
I want to switch back, I guess, now that we've, you know, laid some, you know, foundation work on UIF in its normal sense, to then switch over to the TERS, which you said is completely separate. What are some of the issues that that have, I guess, arisen because of that? We've heard, you know, May applications haven't opened, some employers haven't paid, some employees don't know whether or not they can apply for themselves for that particular benefit. Some people wonder, you know, do they need to have been contributing to UIF all of this time for them to get the TERS benefit? Is it separate? You know, so from where your vantage point, you know, where are people here in this discussion?
Yeah, look, we need to understand that the TERS benefit was a benefit which just arose out of the unprecedented times of COVID-19. So they naturally would be glitches in the system, in as much as we would not want the glitches to be there, but there will be glitches. And a lot of companies will get found out, particularly those employers who haven't registered with the UIF, those employers who don't have the correct documentation for their employees, those employers who haven't transferred funds to UIF. So a lot of them will be found out. But in short, the biggest issue is it's a demand issue. There's a number of people who are trying to access the TERS, and the fear obviously will be that at some stage that the funding might not be readily available to ensure that the people who apply, or the employers rather that apply, won't be able to access the funds timelessly. Also, the second thing is a number of employers are simply not assisting their employees in applying for TERS. However, there's been an amendment to in the manner in which this the applications can be done. Individuals can now also themselves approach the UIF and apply for the TERS benefits in their own capacity.
Oh, I see. I think that one was a very big you know, point of confusion for a lot of people just around, you know, who can and who cannot. The last one on this issue of the issue of TERS going forward, how sustainable is it? I guess just from your point of view, like for how long can the state be dishing out some of these benefits before, like, because I think you said earlier on that the UIF on its own is like a pot of money. And then now you've got TERS, which is separate, which is probably another pot of money. And I think that one sounds to me, because of the number of people that are likely to use it, would have a much shorter time frame through which it can actually be used.
I mean, you need to understand as well that in terms of TERS, there's a limit. There's limit in terms of how much you can actually claim from TERS. There's what you call a percentage sliding scale of 38 to 60%. So the minimum benefit an employee can actually get from TERS is 3,500 rand, and the maximum benefit is approximately 6,700 rand. So that's the minimum, the max you can get, and that's calculated through the UIF calculator, calculating on the basis that the maximum revenue, the maximum income a person gets is 17,712 rand. If you speak about how far the fund can actually run, I cannot give you an answer now. That's an answer which would sit with the actual commissioners at the time. But also, depending on how long this COVID pandemic is going to run for, we're not sure. And naturally, I mean, if there's a limit in terms of the money available, they might, or we can anticipate that at some stage, some claims might not be able to be retrieved timelessly.
Okay. And then finally, I'm going to ask you a question that we asked our previous guest. And I think given everything that's happened economically and because of the lockdown, I think it's quite topical. Just being involved in the labor space, What are some of the big issues? Because I think we've spoken quite extensively about UIF, now about TERS, but in the greater and broader labor space, what are some of the conversations that are being had as a result of this? We've seen companies folding, you know, all of these issues. Like, what are some of the big labor issues that you're seeing right now?
I mean, look, companies are not generating income, and if they are generating income, they might not be generating income at the levels to sustain them. So naturally, the concept of the conversations of retrenchment arises. Preferably, what employers should be looking at doing is considering alternative means to avoid concepts of no work and no pay. The whole concept of no work, no pay, and retrenchment is brewing in the industries a lot. However, we always advise employers to try and consider alternatives to retrenching and to the principle of no work, no pay. It's a very difficult time for everybody, but they could consider things such as pay cuts, such as reduced working hours. Obviously, that agreement will need to be reached with the employees, and the employer cannot unilaterally just apply that. But I mean, in circumstances where the employer can't afford to keep so many employees on the book, employees generally tend to demonstrate a willingness to consider alternatives and to accept alternatives with the employer. So that's where the labor market is sitting at right now.
Okay, so that's been it. A very interesting discussion with Dumisani Ndiweni, who is an associate at law firm Weber Wenzel. He is a specialist with experience in the labor court and labor appeal court, giving us a rundown of the UIF in its normal form, talking about the issues that have tended to arise, which type of employers or who is eligible to benefit from it and who is not, and some of the contributions that are able to make from that side. And then he went on to explain the TERS, or the Temporary Employee-Employer Relief Scheme, that's been instituted by the government. And then just ending off by giving us some of the topical labor discussions that are being had, particularly around companies that aren't able to generate revenues and perhaps coming up with alternatives to retrenchment, such as maybe pay cuts and stuff like that, just so that jobs can be protected. So thank you so much to Dumisani. That's been it for this part of the show. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the Business Buzz.
You don't have to be a liker to like things.
Oh my God.
So like us on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook.
At VoiceOfVids, in brackets, Voice of Vids. The Business Buzz.
So that's been it for today's edition of the Business Buzz. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening. Thank you to Dumisani and Dr. Cardo for sharing their insights with us around UIF and the developing labor relations and employment conversations that are being had at this time. For me personally, I think these are necessary conversations, given the fact that these are things that touch on a lot of people's lives. UIF, I'm sure, is something that a lot of people never thought they would have to acquaint themselves with, but given the depressed state of companies at the moment, the economy, and the rising rate of job losses, you heard some estimates there about job losses rising from 10 to maybe 13, if not 14 or 15 million, just based on what's been going on in the last couple of months, given the lockdown and stuff like that. So definitely important issues, and definitely something that we as the Business Buzz are going to try by all means to follow up, because it's an important issue. Also just the clarity just around how people claim and what the processes are, we're going to try and get more voices for you guys. So that's been it for today's show. Don't forget that you can find and follow Voice of Wits 88.1 on social media. You can find us as Voice of Wits or VAW FM on Facebook. That's our page. You can also find our other page, that is Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VAW FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also search for our podcast on iono.fm. All the links are available there. Otherwise, you can alternatively find us on wits.journalism.co.za. /business. So with that, we've reached the end of tonight's show. Thank you to our technical producer and our amazing team, that's Kutlwano Serame, together with our executive producer Gloria Mabuza and our producer Slindile Musibi. Don't miss the Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Don't turn that dial. There's more great content coming up on the VAW FM lineup. So for myself, Ndio Mob Justice Gavaza, and the rest of the team, it is take care.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz. The Business Buzz Podcast.